This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people, the places, and the future of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. How do we connect you with the future of this great place? By playing a game of pretend. Today, reporter Brandon R. Reynolds is going to take us on an imaginary car trip across Los Angeles. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, Steve. Get in.
What is this? Is this a helicopter?
It's not quite a helicopter. It's an air taxi. It is a flying car.
Okay, neat. So this is where the pretend part comes in, right?
That's right, yes. So check this out. Flying cars are a very real thing, as in they're being developed and tested by companies worldwide, but they're not in use as air taxis anywhere yet. So since we don't have one here, we're going to take an imaginary flight through the power of radio.
Oh, yeah, the power of radio. All right, so while we tool around above LA in our minds, my questions for you, Brandon, are, number one, are these coming to LA? And number two, will they solve the traffic problem?
First answer, yes, they're coming. In December, the mayor's office announced a new public-private partnership to work out the logistics for what's called a vertiport, right, which is where these things can take off and land. The purpose is, and I quote, the introduction of low-noise electric aircraft flying in our local airspace by, I get ready for it, 2023.
That's basically tomorrow.
Yeah, it is. But really, it's going to be a gradual rollout over like 5 or 10 years.
All right, very interesting. And wait a minute. Wait. This thing has no pilot. Brandon, who's flying this thing?
Steve, it's all right. It's self-driving, which is cheaper than pilots in the long term. So take of this imaginary trip to the sky. Just sit back and relax.
All right, I'm okay. Whew, that freaked me out for a second, though.
Yeah, well, technological progress is absolutely terrifying sometimes. Okay, so as I was saying, Mayor Eric Garcetti wants LA to be a leader in urban air mobility.
For this technology, the sky is literally the limit, and it has the potential to reduce emissions, to connect communities, and to grow our economies.
But Perry is speaking about advanced aerial mobility, or AAM, at a recent House subcommittee hearing. He basically made the flying car sales pitch.
150 miles an hour could tie people to jobs and opportunity without creating more sprawl. We know that well in Los Angeles, where the traffic is among the worst in the country, and our air quality traditionally has been too, even though we've made huge strides.
All right, so we took off from a parking lot in Santa Monica to go downtown for lunch. This time of day, that's about 30 minutes in a car. With a flying car, we're going to do it in about 10, depending on turbulence.
Yeah, okay, I'm looking down. I gotta say, Brandon, the 10 freeway looks pretty awful. I mean, Mayor Garcetti was saying this could basically end traffic, right?
Well, he didn't actually promise that, but supporters tend to suggest it without actually, you know, saying it. Like this company, Wisk, their website says, sitting in traffic will soon be a thing of the past. Here's their promotional video.
Traffic is beneath your feet. And now, less time getting there means more time being there. The answer?
So a lot of the rhetoric around urban air mobility suggests that it's somehow vaguely a little bit a solution to traffic.
But it sounds like you're not convinced.
Well, so experts in what we would consider earthbound congestion say it'll be the same thing in the skies. In other words, it's not going to solve congestion because of a thing called induced demand, where you add lanes that then get clogged again. Okay, so say everyone's flying around, right? And the freeways open up a little.
And then people will just move back into their cars, right? Because the highways are free and it creates congestion again.
Exactly. But the UAM industry is quick to say that flying cars could still help if, you know, you do all of this other stuff. In fact, Hyundai's partnering with LA on flying cars right now. Here's Hyundai's Pam Cohn.
So UAM has been called the ultimate congestion buster, as have autonomous ground vehicles, as have micromobility. And from our perspective, the answer is actually that all of them need to come together in order to beat congestion.
This makes sense, but it's also breakfast cereal logic. You know how commercials for Lucky Charms say part of a balanced breakfast, meaning it's healthy if you eat like a grapefruit? That's what the UAM industry is saying. Flying cars are part of a balanced transportation breakfast, along with public transit and bikes and regular cars. But whether the flying car is good or bad for transportation, you know, whether it's a grapefruit or just a bowl of brightly colored sugary crap, that all remains to be seen.
Speaking of which, they got snacks.
No, man. The markup on those is awful. It's like a mini bar.
Oh, man, but I am craving a Toblerone. Okay, so urban air mobility won't solve traffic. It's just one more way to get around. But it will be available to everybody?
Not at first. In the early years, there's going to be fewer flying cars, so it'll be expensive to ride. What the industry wants, though, is for it to become as cheap as rideshare.
So no one, Brandon, would actually own their own flying car like the Jetsons did, right?
No cars folding into briefcases. Hey, Steve, are you eating the candy?
You want one? It's hazelnut.
Man, come on, Steve. That's like $8.
Okay, but just the way you can hop in an Uber or a Lyft, right? You'll be able to pull up an app. Is that what you're saying? I mean, how much is this ride going to set me back?
Well, they say it'll be about $30 a ride. Anyway, that's the number LA arrived at after working with the World Economic Forum to create this sort of blueprint for the flying car future. It's called the Principles of the Urban Sky, and it says that by 2030, less than 10 years, there'll be 23,000 vehicles flying around the skies of LA. And if so, they say $30.
$30. All right. To fly across town and avoid traffic for $30. It's not bad. But like you said, that depends on how many flying cars there are and when they're flying and all. So is that price, Brandon, actually feasible?
Well, Steve, I asked about this.
We have this technical term in transportation that I'm going to use. So if you need a definition, just let me know. This sounds to me like bullshit.
That's UCLA urban planning professor Michael Manville using a bovine term of scorn. He's generally pointing out that the transportation industry is full of promises and timelines. Self-driving cars, electric vehicles, high-speed rail, all of it.
I mean, it's just the beauty of technology that doesn't exist yet is that you can say anything about it, right? It's going to be affordable and we're going to have this many vehicles in 7 years. Give me a break. I mean, it doesn't work that way.
So let me get this straight. They may or may not be affordable and accessible to everybody. If they are, we'll potentially have thousands and thousands of vehicles in the sky. But if then we restrict the number of flying cars zooming over our houses, then it'll only be affordable for people with money. Is that right?
Exactly right. Urban air mobility solves a problem for the individual with money, but it's not actually clear if it'll solve a problem for society.
Whoa. Ooh.
Oh.
Whoa.
Oh. Oh, yeah. And turbulence. Turbulence will absolutely still be a thing.
All right, I'm checking my seatbelt. Ah, downtown. Where do we land?
In theory, I always have to say in theory, vertiports could be built on high-rise rooftops or at regional airports. But let's say the one we're landing at here is a converted parking garage. Now, imagine it's got a food court and a bunch of transit options to get you in and out. So e-bikes or rideshare or even this new type of autonomous vehicle they're talking about. And here we are.
Now, that took us about 10 minutes or so. So one last question, Brandon. Why is urban air mobility, why is this the future if it doesn't solve the traffic problem?
That's the wildest thing to think about. Why did we get hooked on flying cars in the first place? The Jetsons, right? Culture, stories, movies. The future of transportation comes straight out of the past. I mean, it seems futuristic to go in a flying car, right? But isn't the biggest traffic-solving innovation of the past couple of years basically Zoom? So you don't have to go anywhere. Anyway, I've got a whole other story about that.
All right. All right, Brandon R. Reynolds, come on back next week for more on what LA transportation of the future will look like.
Will do. And yeah, lunch is on you.
All right. Where do we eat in the future, Brandon? I mean, do they have flying tacos or flying pizza?
No. It's still mostly terrestrial.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW, Steve Chiatakis here. Maybe you've had this experience. You're walking down the street, or maybe driving down the street, and something catches your eye. It's a couch, or maybe it's a bedside table, a mattress sitting idly along the sidewalk or propped up haphazardly against the side of a building. It's someone's discarded furniture. Well, what do you think when you see it? Do you think it's bug-infested trash? Is it street art? Is it a salvageable treasure? Turns out in Los Angeles, you've got all sorts of opinions about street furniture. And writer Julissa James explored the room decor realm in her latest piece for the LA Times. Hey, Julissa.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. You're a journalist, and your opinion is sacred and secret. But what is what is your take on street furniture, if you wouldn't mind saying?
Yeah, of course. So living in Los Angeles, I've had this long obsession with street furniture, right? And yeah, I mean,
because it's everywhere.
Exactly. It's everywhere. It's something that I've always noticed. And a couple of months ago, I posted a picture on Instagram of a pile of discarded furniture on my block. This was really good looking stuff, right? And the reaction I got from people was pretty visceral. I mean, everything from people asking me what my exact coordinates were so they could grab it for themselves, to people telling me not to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
And especially in a pandemic, by the way, Julissa.
Exactly, especially in our post-pandemic world. I won't even say post, especially in our pandemic world. So it was one of those things that really got me thinking about my relationship to street furniture and just Los Angeles's relationship to it as a whole.
You can find mattresses and a sofa hanging out on the side of the road in nearly every town or along the freeway I've seen them. Is there something, though, about LA street furniture that's unique?
You know, and Steve, this is a really good question, and it's something that I continue to ask myself through this reporting process. And I think there really is. I think the way that our city is set up, the fact that number one, we're a driving city, right? And it allows us to easily drop pieces off on the curb, pick them up, scope them out if they look usable or interesting. We're also this sprawling metropolis, and street couches are a natural byproduct of that. There's so many people who live here. And also LA's transient nature, right? People are always moving in. They're always moving out. And then also just Angelino's kind of romantic view on street furniture, which is something I really learned about and was excited about when reporting on this piece.
Do you think the pandemic has led to more discarded furniture? I mean, so many people are redecorating, maybe some minimalism going on. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So during the pandemic, the amount of discarded furniture has actually increased. According to LA Sanitation Services and Environment, the number of calls for bulky item pickup, which is couches, mattresses, and any other piece of furniture too big for the dumpster, went up 20%. I spoke with Elena Stern, the public information director for the LA Department of Public Works, and she theorizes that this is a result of the number of people remodeling their homes during the pandemic or moving out in a hurry or even evictions, right? And one of my sources that I talked to, Zach Haley, who is an avid street furniture scavenger, thinks that the fact that people are so skeeved out by germs during the pandemic, despite what we know about COVID-19 and how it's transmitted, has caused a lot of the good stuff to pile up as well.
I mean, it's kind of like I think about if I see a mattress, I would never in my entire life would ever take a mattress and take it home.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of like buying a used pair of shoes. It's for me, it's just like now some people are different. Right.
Yeah.
Everybody's different about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And one person that you profile in your piece is Annalise McNeil, who's on the line as well. She's a TV writer and L.A. furniture salvager in her own right. Hi, Annalise.
Hi, Steve.
So Jalissa writes that 90% of the furniture in your apartment in Burbank was salvaged. That's an amazing number.
That's completely accurate, yes. About 3-4 years ago, I started with one piece of furniture, and it just kind of all tumbled from there. And it's been a really fun journey. I would say most people are surprised because I like to refurbish my pieces. And I especially enjoy having friends over for cocktails and while they're seated with a glass of wine, telling them they're sitting on a piece of trash.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Are you of the bed bug variety, though? Like when you see a mattress, are you like, there are bed bugs in that thing?
I can check for them. I've never had a bed bug problem in all my years of salvaging. So maybe that's part of my lack of aversion. I probably wouldn't do a mattress unless it was like free on Craigslist. I knew where it was coming from. But usually people put out furniture not because they're gross, just they don't have space for it anymore. And they're hoping someone else will pick it up.
Yeah.
I'm not convincing you.
No, it's not about convincing, because I really do think it's according to personal taste, right? And
yes,
whether or not this is something that, like, I'm a bit of a germaphobe. If I see a mattress, I'm like, I'm not taking that mattress. I want nothing to do with that. I'll go buy one from even a cheap store. You know, if I need a mattress, it doesn't much matter
but
to me.
But what if you saw a mid-century chair that had a lot of potential?
Oh, I would probably grab it.
Yeah.
I'd probably grab a chair.
That's where it starts.
If it's something that can be sanded or reupholstered or something like that, and you can see it, explain, Annalise, the process. You see something on the street. How do you decide if it's worth picking up?
So usually I like the design of it and I see potential. And so I'm looking at some of my pieces around my living room right now. And I'll check for bugs. I've never had an issue with that. For the Ducks chair that I found in Echo Park, a friend spotted it for me, and my boyfriend and I ran over there to grab it. And you could see it had great bones, and it had beautiful wood, and I was able to reupholster it and redo the wood. And it honestly, these pieces run for about $2,500, and this was free by a dumpster. So there's a lot of great furniture to be found out there that just needs somebody to see its potential. A little bit like, what was that movie? Pretty Woman.
Aww.
Another idea is I always rent a rug doctor, which you can get at Vons, and I always clean anything I find. So everyone's very surprised that this is stuff I found on the street, and that's kind of part of my shtick, is that I want it to look like something that you would buy at a maybe a cool modern mid-century store.
And the rug doctor is like steam cleaning it, right?
Yeah, like steam cleaning it. Because I have found rugs I have a couple rugs in my apartment that I found on the street that I've steam cleaned, and they're shiny and new.
You may be convincing me here, Annalise, because I do see some stuff.
Is it working?
No, it's true, because I see stuff on the side of the road and I'm like, I can't do it. First of all, I don't need anything else. But number two, it's like, I just think it's dirty. But then if you can clean it up and make it look really great, I mean, I really do think it is, you know, trash to treasure.
And it becomes really special to you. Like each of my pieces, just kind of the blood, sweat, and tears that I've kind of put into each one. It's, you know, it's something with a story. And I kind of like the idea that I don't know the story before. Like, who knows? Maybe it was an actress who came and she left it behind when she moved back home. Or maybe, you know, you just don't know. So there's kind of a magical lore to each piece, too, which is kind of fun. And it's fun to tell the stories of where you found pieces. Oh, I found this in Koreatown. It makes your home kind of textured and layered. And I think that's especially fun.
I don't want to give away any of your secrets on the air, but are there any specific spots that you can like, hey, some of the best stuff?
You know what?
Yeah.
Sleepy neighborhoods. So I live in Toluca Lake and I'm a runner, and I would, especially during the pandemic, I would be running almost every day, and I would constantly see furniture, and it's a, you know, very beautiful, wealthy neighborhood, sit out for days and days and no one would come get it because it's a quiet neighborhood. People aren't driving through. Like on busy thoroughfares, you'll see furniture put out, and often it goes pretty quick because a lot, you know, thousands of people are driving by. But in sleepy neighborhoods, They'll put out pieces that'll just sit there and sit there. And those are often the ones that I nab. So I recommend if you ever want to take a walk or a drive through kind of a sleepy little cute neighborhood of Los Angeles, I bet you'll find some gems. And also alleys or by big apartment buildings. Big apartment buildings often have people moving in and out. And so byproduct of that is you'll see furniture out on the sidewalk, you know, about every month.
Jalissa, you profiled a few other people in your piece who don't necessarily pick up the furniture that they see, but they do photograph it.
Right.
So this is also playing out in the, you know, the room decor realm.
Absolutely. Yeah. So a lot of the folks that I talk to, again, I think the people that are obsessed with street furniture in the city have different motivations, right? Annalise is really driven by kind of climate anxiety and this pursuit of a zero waste lifestyle. A lot of other folks that I talk to, their obsession with street furniture just really stems from the fact that they see it on the side of the road and there's something beautiful to them about it. And they stop and they photograph it. I mean, one of the folks that I talk to, Keith Plosek, he's a journalism professor at USC, and he's behind the long-running account and website Street Couch. So he posts pictures of street couches that he sees in LA and gets submissions from across the world. And much like Annalise was saying, for him, a street couch that he sees on the side of the road is not just a street couch. It's a story, right? And he imagines kind of the life that it had. And he said this really striking thing where it's this idea of seeing the inside stuff now outside that draws him to this practice. And a lot of other folks, I talked to a researcher from Inglewood, Sarah Pino, who again sees street furniture and photographs it almost like an anthropological study. Mm. I think that you can learn so much about, like she says, you can learn so much about how people live by examining their trash and their furniture and the stuff that they put out on the street.
Doesn't that seem, though, a little invasive? I guess it's anonymous, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you're not really identifying who you are in your furniture. You can only envision who the people are who owned it.
Right. I mean, it is kind of invasive, but at the same time, this stuff is laid bare for all of us to see. And I think the fact that we can imagine the kind of life it had. I mean, Keith mentioned this thing where it's like all street furniture has a story, but there's something about couches. We sleep on them. Some people die on them, ugh. You know?
Yeah.
They're sitting in our living rooms and they're kind of supporting characters in our lives. And to see them just out on the street like that, there's something almost sad about it, but there's also a real beauty to it as well.
Annalise, do you think you're going to continue to pick up furniture on the streets?
Heck yeah. I cannot imagine ever buying a piece of furniture ever again. Hopefully when we have a bigger place, my entire home will be decorated by refurbished street furniture. I just love the idea of restoration and the stories. I think it's really exciting.
I mean, I wonder what the, you know, living spaces, I wonder what they have to say.
Yes.
Right?
I'm taking a bite out of their business.
You really are, Annalise. I'm looking for a coffee table, by the way, but a unique one. So will you keep on?
Ooh, I'll keep my eyes out for you. Yeah. I just found a mid-century one. I'll send you a picture.
I would love that. You guys have been great. This has been a lot of fun. I want to thank you for chatting. Annalise, TV writer, furniture salvager in Burbank, profiled in the piece by LA Times writer Jalissa James called Long Live Street Couches, Inside LA's Favorite and Controversial Obsession. Thanks to you both.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Next week, you heard today about flying cars. What if the future of transport in LA is less futuristic and more, say, retro? Of course, next week being in the future, we look to the future a lot when it comes to KCRW's place in it. This station has been a part of the fiber of LA for decades with news and culture and music, you name it. Voices from all nooks and crannies of our special place here in Southern California. So with KCRW's good old-fashioned pledge drive, when you give, you secure the future. That fiber and KCRW plays on. And we'd love for you to be a part of it, to cross that threshold and become an active participant in public radio. And today only, by the way, by midnight tonight, when you support KCRW, you'll automatically be entered to win a flash sweepstakes, $500 in credits to Postmates. It's a pretty irresistible prize. Hope you'll check it out. Two lucky winners will be selected at midnight tonight. That doubles your chances for $500 worth of Sushis or tacos or burgers, oh my, all yours thanks to your support of KCRW. KCRW.com/join. You'll be doing your part to fund the future in our good old-fashioned pledge drive. KCRW.com/join or 800-600-5279. And thank you for your support. Catherine Barnes, Danielle Chiriguayo, Sonia Geis, John Meek. John Meek, by the way, with our sound design and our special flying car segment today. Thanks, John. Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Christine Comito, Holly Adams, all with hands and ears on the show. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.